What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2. Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swan hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. I'm Brian Shackman, along with John Senecal. Wow, what a difference a week makes.
Crazy difference a week makes.
Put aside Mondays. You know, Red Sox had a day off on Monday. The Yankees and the Rays lose, which we can talk about that stuff. But the truth is, in a week, I thought the Yankees, honestly, I thought they were irresponsible at the trade deadline. I thought it was stupid. And now they're, just a couple of games out of the second wild card spot, and they're clearly in striking distance of even the Red Sox now.
Right. But you say you thought they were irresponsible and stupid?
Yes. I thought.
For what they did?
Yes.
Is that because they ripped off Rizzo from you, or is that just because you thought they shouldn't be buying at that point?
Well, I think that. You make a fair point that I was a little edgy, maybe, because I thought they did take Rizzo because
no one saw that coming.
Right. And I really view the Yankees as a non-playoff team. But
even with them being at the time of the trade deadline, they were 3.5 out of the wild card.
But I saw no path.
Right. No path after that if you made it.
Right. And so
see him making it at all.
I didn't. And so, I mean, assuming that either the Red Sox or the Rays get one wild card, I don't know. I just, then Seattle traded their closer, and like, it's a real head scratcher.
Seattle was a head scratcher, they were doing.
I'll be honest, I didn't look at the Yankees as a playoff team, even a wild card team.
Well, in your fairness, when we spoke last, right, you asked me if they were going to make the playoffs, and they had to basically play, 14 games over 500?
Yeah, you said no.
And I said no, right.
And so,
like you said, now a week later, you got Anthony Rizzo.
Yep.
You got Gallo.
I love him. I mean, I love him because he's perfect in New York. He's an Italian American who's a gamer. He's a candid guy. He's honest. Like, and he would be great in a Red Sox uniform too.
Right. So, what happened in your opinion?
Okay. So, if you want to, we can get into some of the details of the deal.
But I mean, let's cut to the chase. That's the biggest talking point right now between the Yankees and Red Sox is the fact that the Yankees snatched Rizzo from
right.
them.
Or the Red Sox could have had him and decided not to. I mean, they could have outbid the Yankees for what they gave up, most likely. But here's the thing is that I can't be mad at the Red Sox because the management and ownership seems to view them the way I did, which is not a first-place team. They're overachieving.
You've said that all along.
Right. And so in that vein, you shouldn't go nuts to try to win. But at the same time, the Rizzo thing gets in my craw because it didn't cost too much. You didn't have to sacrifice the future, and you could fill an obvious need. And so I can't get mad because they did what I would have expected them to do had the season, before the season, if they put that situation. I'm frustrated now because they're close, but the Rizzo thing bugs me because I think it had an effect on the team. I think the team, even though they got Austin Davis and Hansel Robles, who were throwaways, Chris Sale could come back, and you couldn't trade for, I mean, outside of Scherzer, you probably couldn't get somebody with his stature. And Schwarber's a legitimate player. I mean, he's a legitimate player. They don't have a slot for him unless he plays first base. But that's the thing with Rizzo is that he fit in a place that they had a serious need. And I think the players, they're deflated. I do. And whether they can rebound from it, maybe they can. I'm sure they can. But to lose, a couple in a row right after the trade deadline shows me the players expected more and they're disappointed. And that's where the criticism can come in.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, they did not need to do much of anything to get Rizzo. You know, and you look
what'd they give up? What'd the Yankees give up?
A couple of minor leaguers that weren't even their top prospects, and they got the Cubs to pay for him this year, the rest of his year. So the Yankees aren't even paying for him.
And Jed Hoyer is a former Red Sox.
That's what I couldn't understand. And you and I were talking before this, and you said, well, you know, he's got Cubs ties, you know, with Jed Hoyer. And I was like, yeah, well, we'll see. And boom, out of nowhere. I mean, nobody saw the Yankees getting Rizzo. Nobody saw that. I mean, diehard Yankee fans didn't see it. I mean, when I read that and my two kids were in the room with me and I read that tweet, I got the biggest, what ever.
Was your first instinct to be excited?
Excited, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I wasn't even thinking the fact that we snatched him from the Red Sox. I was just thinking like, oh my God, we got ourselves a bona fide great defender, a great team guy, and a really good player. Yeah. And he's won a World Series. Now, you can look at his postseason numbers. They're not extraordinary, but when he was in the World Series, they were good.
Right.
But again, he hasn't had a ton of postseason experience.
I also, you know, I hate to say it, and I don't follow them personality. I don't know Glaber from Judge in terms of, you know, makeup and chemistry. But there are very few guys in Major League Baseball who are better clubhouse guys than Rizzo.
Right.
And so, like, finally, there's somebody who I find likable. Like, I just didn't find a lot of guys in the Yankee. And it's not just because I'm a Red Sox fan. Like, I've never been, as you know, like an explicit Yankee. I didn't really hate the Yankees until A-Rod, right? So I think Rizzo's a guy, he's hard to hate.
No, he's definitely hard to hate. But the other thing I like about him is, you know, he wasn't making a ton of money, you know, given the standards of baseball, because he signed his contract a while ago. So I think, you know, if he does play good and he's a great defender,
you can
re-sign him easily, get a 3-year deal on him, probably around $30 million.
So listen, real quick before we get to some other issues and and we'll run down what the rest of the show is going to be about. So having said that, so where we stand here at the beginning of August, the way the roster is now, and you know, Gerrit Cole hopefully will come back healthy, you know, and hopefully it's only one start he'll miss. How do you feel? Who's got a better chance right now? Obviously, the Red Sox have some games in front of the Yankees, but are you feeling the Yankees are a shoo-in to catch that last wild card now?
Well, so listen, here's the way I look at it. Coming off the trade deadline, the Yankees were, air quotes, the better team, right, than the Red Sox.
I would grant you that.
Okay. Now, being a few days after that, the Yankees have some issues. You mentioned Cole. Herman's on the DL. Urshela's on the DL. I mean, there is some glaring issues with their rotation right now. We saw, you know, Haney experiment did not work out.
No.
So, yes, the Yankees are riding high on the Rizzo deal. I mean, Gallo, good defender, hasn't done anything really as far as hitting-wise yet, but you know what you're going to get with him, right?
I like him.
And he's going to play, and he's better than Stanton, if you ask me. I mean, don't get me started about Stanton. But to answer your question, the Yankees have issues still. Like, let's not get too excited. They have some glaring issues. Like, the COVID is... COVID, we could talk a whole episode about what could happen with the COVID going down the road, too.
Right. I mean, it could go anywhere. And when it comes to...
But to answer your question, Brian, I think, yes, they can do it, but they have a lot of work ahead of them. They got to get guys healthy. DJ's got some lingering issues. They got to get Severino hopefully back, and Sale's quicker to come back than him. But not to go Yankees-Red Sox here, just to go talk about the Yankees, I think they do have some issues. But, yes, they got the work cut out for them. They can win the wild card. They have games against the teams that they're chasing,
right?
And they can do it, but they are not healthy.
Well, listen, we're going to talk a lot about, you know, we're 2 weeks away from – three more games in the Bronx between the Red Sox and the Yankees. And, you know, the Red Sox
have... Is it three
have,
or four? Do they make up a doubleheader?
Oh, well, maybe they added one. I don't know.
They might because they got rained out and
maybe that's... They are going to make one
but
up.
But whatever. They got more.
The Sox are in Detroit. They're in Toronto. Then home against Tampa before Baltimore, which is in advance of New York. So,
The Yankees got four against Seattle coming up, or three, I think.
Yeah, and Seattle, I think they're going to come off the map. But, I mean, to be in Toronto and then have Tampa at home, I mean, the Red Sox don't have an easy road. And Detroit is no longer a pushover for the most part. So, I think with these seven games on the road for the Red Sox, they have to be 4-3. And they have to win quickly, and I think it's really important to win the series in Detroit and at least split in Toronto to at least, you know, give them some confidence. I think, honestly, I think that the clubhouse, even though they all think that they could play well, everyone was playing 10% above their potential just about. I mean, J.D. Martinez has been a nobody, but I think you can't ask them to sustain it. Guys like Verdugo have already fallen off the map, so I really think they felt like they needed help, and maybe Schwarber can get back quickly. I mean, he's still not healthy, so if they can get him back in a week and he's a contributor, then maybe, but I'm very nervous. I won't say freaked out, but I'm definitely nervous. nervous, and they can't go on a prolonged losing streak. And so the next few games are incredibly important.
Yeah, it's important to get to make sure if Schwarber, you know, you can pin in hopes on him playing first base. He's got one game at first base.
You know what? I would do it like Moneyball and do it with Hatteberg. I would work his tail off for a week and put him there. You know, his Dahlback's a liability, and you know, for the most part, 85% of first base is easy. It's the other 15% where it's trouble.
Yeah, Pappy did it.
What's that?
Pappy did it.
Yeah, I mean, he did it when he had to, right? I mean, well, and I think Schwarber's arguably more athletic in the field than Pappy. So I would just go ahead and do it. I played first base almost my whole life when I played baseball, but you can hide a guy there.
Yeah.
You can. And even though it is, I respect the position. So, I mean, I would work him out there and put him there. Anyway, he's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. You can get us just about anywhere, always posting things on YouTube and Facebook, as well as Twitter at podcast fan base. You can get everything on that Twitter page. Let's quickly talk about a couple things here. I want to talk about Joey Votto, and I want to talk about, you know, guys like Javier Baez and the whole bat flipping culture, which we've touched on before. But I thought the most recent one that got a lot of attention was offensive. So I want to start with Votto. You brought it to my attention. I saw the home run streak. I was like, you know what? He's 37. It's pretty cool. But then you made me go inside the numbers, and he's pretty unbelievable at 37, what he's doing.
Yeah. He is an impressive player. I mean, Joey Votto is no joke when it comes to the numbers. I mean, he's a career 300 hitter, 416 on-base percentage in his career.
Yeah, he's got his OPS is 936 for his career.
Yeah, I mean, he keeps playing a few more years. He has chance at Hall of Fame numbers.
That's what I was going to ask you about Hall of Fame, because he just won Player of the Month for July.
Yeah.
It was the first time he's ever won Player of the Month in 15 years. How can that guy be a Hall of Famer? I looked at his career numbers. He's got almost 2,000 hits. He's got over 300 home runs. He's got a career 300 average, but like, how can he's not a Hall of Famer?
No, he probably isn't a Hall of Famer, lost in the shuffle, but man, he is a solid. It's amazing when you look at him. And the other thing, you know, when you really dig into Joey Votto, I don't know if you remember, you know, back in the day, Zach Greinke went through the same thing. He had anxiety issues and depression issues after his father passed away, and that was like in 2008.
I did not know that.
All stuff that's really coming to light now. It's Simone Biles in the Olympics, and has come to light even more in the last year or so, obviously, with how the country's been and everything. But, you know, back in the day, you know, that was kind of looked at as, you know, he was kind of a weirdo.
Right.
He was looked at, you know, and his father passed away, and he kind of had a breakdown, I guess, and just kind of disappeared and was treated for anxiety. But boy, you know, did he come back, and he really, I mean, 2010 MVP. I mean, Joey Votto is a great player, but, you know, getting back to your the whole, like, bat flipping and everything, you know, what happened with Joey Votto was he was in that Citi Field and they were chanting overrated, overrated, overrated. And he came up and parked one. And
right.
He just comes across the base, points at his back of his jersey and points at his chest and basically says, you know, there you go. I think
that's fine.
I have no problem with that.
And Votto is a guy I do think his energy, and there's video upon video of him interacting with kids and doing this and that.
And flipping out here and there. He has his moments.
Sure. But I mean, I think that showing passion and emotion is one thing. And I think that historically, we'll get into it, because I think that players, especially Major League Baseball, are overly sensitive about macho crap. And I think like this whole thing about showing up, I think that half the time what they think is showing up is just celebratory, and they need to just deal with it and stop being so stupidly macho. But I do think there's a line, and I don't know if it was Baez. Who was the guy who did that thing against Cincinnati where he was like canoeing?
Baez.
Yeah.
Javier Baez, who's now a Met.
So I would want to
They'll say they have a history, though, him and Amir Garrett.
I don't care.
Exactly.
Like, I don't care. Like, that
Amir
to me.
Amir Garrett is the same guy that took on the whole Pirates team, if you remember.
You know what? There are issues. Pitchers do stuff too. When they strike out a guy, if they want to grunt and they want to do something, that's fine. But like, and again, like, I'm just the qualifier to me is like showing people up, they're too sensitive about it. But when you're canoeing down the first baseline after a home run,
right. That's
a bridge too far, and he deserves to get knocked out.
It's not
down.
Only that. Not only is he canoeing, but like literally, if you watch that back, like he's standing at home plate, like literally calling him out. Like I'm sure he had some more choice words than what we could say, but he's literally like, it's like the dude outside the bar who wants to fight you because you looked at his girlfriend.
But like Garrett,
he's standing at home plate, like, You're a punk. And then he canoes down to first base.
Like, I would have gone after him. I mean, the fact that Garrett didn't was, I thought, was impressive.
The umpire was literally laughing. Did you see the umpire walking Garrett off the field? And Garrett's probably like, what is wrong with this guy? And he's just probably, he's just laughing at him. Like, what a clown.
And again, like, I think guys are too guyish. I do. I think that this whole, all the unwritten rules in baseball, I think they're unwritten, like, and now all of a sudden they're codified, like whether it's how people slide or, you know, I hate the fact that people can't pitch inside. I mean, I hate all that stuff.
And it also was a fly ball at a warning track that if the outfield wasn't in, it's a routine fly ball any day of the week. Just to go back to that. Like, right. I'm just like, these guys like Marcell Ozuna, you know, your resident latest domestic violencer, right? Hits a home run, down three runs, hits a solo shot in the sixth inning, and he's taking a picture of himself rounding first base.
I think that's an idiot. Now, forget about the domestic stuff.
Now, like, what message does that send to, like, our kids playing?
Stupid. It's stupid.
It's bad enough you got to watch these 12-year-olds gear up with 42 mittens on their hands and arm plates and all this stuff. Next thing you know, they're going to be taking a picture of themselves as they cross home plate.
Right. And there are so many bloggers and podcasters out there who say it's good for baseball. It's fun. Like the bat flip, I don't mind the bat flips,
It's got to be timely.
I don't consider myself anti-fun if I think that there's a line. Like, right. And now that this is a whole culture, like, how can I outdo the bat flips?
Right. How high can I get it? Can I get it over the dugout?
I'm sorry.
And honestly, Brian, it's more in the youth sports. When you look at some of these youth sports videos, you got high school kids bat flipping it out of the field.
Is that more entertaining? Like, honestly, are we old for saying no?
I think it's Bush, if you ask me. It's Bush League. All right, first of all, if a major leaguer hits a home run and he bat flips it and it goes flying up on top of the dugout, like, is that ever going to happen? I don't think they bat flip it that bad, but now you got kids that are literally doing that.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I'm sorry.
The bat's landing as they're coming around home plate.
And so the millennial guys can say, you're just an old dude who doesn't get it. And fine, you know what?
Millennial guys are not watching baseball.
I'll stay in my, you know, there's a lot of vocal voices out there who say, you got to loosen baseball up, got to make it more fun. Well, I don't think a guy canoeing down the first baseline and a bat flip that hits the backstop makes baseball more fun. What would make it more fun is fewer you know, warm-up pitches, less time between pitches.
Cheaper tickets.
And a whole bunch of other things that would be tweaks that would make sense. It's about, everything is about the speed of the game.
So why aren't they disciplining that? Like, they have no problem disciplining everything you do.
I think they think that they bought into they drank some of the Kool-Aid that they think that this is quote-unquote fun.
Now, you wouldn't see Fernando Tatis Jr. do that.
No, he's the best. I mean,
like, granted, he loves to pimp a home run, right?
He can pimp a home run.
That's fine, but he's not literally calling out you or calling out the team, and it's just classless. And that's Javi Baez.
I don't like fights. I don't like hitting players with baseballs. But I would want to kick Baez's ass for what he did. There's no doubt about it.
And I'm sure they're going to play again, the Mets and the Reds now.
Well, so you got to be. It's never subtle, but you have to at least be subtle enough where it doesn't
get
your team in trouble.
Between those two, it'll never be subtle. Someone else is going to have to beat him, not Garrett.
I know. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. We're a couple weeks away from another Yankees Red Sox matchup. Listen, I want to talk. I was entranced because I watched it live. I was doing my morning radio show on WTIC News Talk 1080 in Connecticut, and I watched the USA Japan baseball game, and it was back and forth. I mean, if you watch the game, it was incredible. It was, you know, up a couple, down a couple, tied, and the US
it was
team
always one team up a run.
And the US was up one run in the ninth, I believe, and then they lost the game on a walk off. And there's a couple of things surrounding this game that came up. One is, I will say that it was really sad to me, and I would cheer for Team USA. I read a lot of U.S. history. I know how bad Japan was in the Pacific War, but they're our friends, and I have no problem with them. I was sad that they couldn't have had that game in front of a full crowd. I just thought it was so disappointing.
It looked so weird. It just looked so
weird.
But
in the home country, it would have 40,000 people going bananas, and it was a great base. I mean, there are very few.
There's no fans at all in the Olympics,
nothing,
right?
Nothing.
Nothing. So why not wait another year?
Well, they already put it off a year.
We'll wait another year.
It's 2 years from the next one. You either got to, if it wasn't going to happen this summer, it's going to be canceled. But you saw a nuance in that game that I didn't see. There was something happened that you thought that
I felt like they got squeezed on a 3-2 pitch.
The U.S. did.
US
was it
did.
Like, so arguing balls and strikes, to me, it had to be egregious. It wasn't egregious.
I mean, they don't have the K-zone set up because it's obviously, you know, Olympic play, right? And it's,
It was a Japanese ump?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that forced in a run or base?
No, I think that just got the bases loaded and they had that led to the tying run coming in. I mean, it is what it is, but I mean, how do you make it unbiased? It looked like there was an American up in the field, there was a Japanese ump or behind the plate.
So maybe that's marginal. But
there's not many Island of Samoa umps out there, you know.
You said that baseball's not in the next Olympics?
No, they're only doing it because it's a courtesy to Japan, because that's their sport. So they're putting it in this Olympics. Baseball has not been in the Olympics, I think, since 2008, maybe?
So what?
Or four?
Do you think it should be?
Absolutely. Here's the deal. Like, you can't get the marquee players, but these guys are coming out the ball. You got, the Todd father on there. You know, you got,
Ian Kinsler's on Team Israel.
Ryan LaVarney, former Red Sox, Team Israel. But there's some name players on there. But they had some young kid, Boz, pitching for the U.S. that started. He looked okay, but he was like 22 years old. Like, some of these guys are on minor league teams.
There's a Red Sox prospect who's DHing for the team. I know they can't get the best players. Maybe they do like soccer. Soccer does under 23, and maybe that works. Maybe it doesn't, because obviously you have a lot of 18 to 23 year old players who might be in the bigs.
I don't think they can ever agree on who's going to be able to go.
Japan sends some of their real older players.
They started.
Yeah. So
they said the majority of that team is they paused their season. Japan pauses their season for it, from what I've read, I think.
30 years ago, I would have said it's not a good idea because, the U.S. is so dominant. But the U.S., between the Dominican and Venezuela, and you obviously have Japan, I think that there are eight teams in the international baseball landscape that would make it fun. And since the U.S. can't send its best players, I actually think it's kind of a classic Olympic sport. Like, softball's different. I feel like even though the U.S. women didn't win gold, I feel like, really? Who's going to really challenge the Americans in softball?
Right.
But baseball, I think, is a true international sport. So,
and what better way to grow it than the main stage, every 4 years?
What's the argument against it, that it's not international enough?
I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it takes too much work to pull it off. Maybe people don't care. I don't know. I don't know what the exact argument is.
It was fun to watch, and I liked the fact that, Team Israel came through Connecticut for their tune-ups. It's cool. And to have these ball players have another shot.
They have the World Baseball Classic that they basically dreamed up because it wasn't in the Olympics, But that has a huge following.
Yeah, I think it should be an Olympic sport. I do. But then there's, all this gender equity. I think they're getting rid of softball too. I'm pretty sure they are too. Anyway, listen, we got a couple more weeks before the Red Sox and Yankees go. Since we're doing this week to week now for Odyssey and it's on a larger platform, let's just take a quick second and look at all the way through until for the next week. So the Red Sox have 3 against Detroit, 4 against Toronto, 3 at home against Tampa, then 3 at home against Baltimore before the Yankees. I think that the Red Sox can't beat Tampa right now. And they already have the starters laid out, by the way, all the way through August 12th for the Red Sox.
There's no possible way the Yankees have that.
Yeah, wonder if Heaney will ever get to start again.
Cole's not going to play.
After what happened. So I think the Red Sox are going to get 2 or 3 in Detroit. I think that they're going to lose 3 or 4 in Toronto. I do. And they're going to lose 2 or 3 with Tampa. And then I don't know what's going to happen in Baltimore. But I believe that the Yankees and the Red Sox on August 17th on a Tuesday, I think they will be within three games or less.
Yeah,
Red Sox.
The Yankees had not a good showing Monday against Baltimore, obviously, but then they got 2 more. Then they got the big series against Seattle, 4 at home, and then they go to KC, and then Chicago, and obviously Chicago's not going to be a pushover.
No, but I think
that's the White
Sox
that is, not the fire sale Cubs.
Right, the White Sox are tough, but that's a favorable schedule. Kansas City, and I think the Mariners, even though they're pretty good, they're in the Bronx, and you should win more at home. So
you also should win against Baltimore, too. The second worst team in baseball next to your Arizona Diamondbacks.
That's a fair point. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, and we will talk to you next week.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.